Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In our studio right now, though, I want to visit again with Ben Austin. He's the author of High Risers, Cabrini Green and the Fate of the American Public Housing and American Public Housing. He was in our studio during LitFest when that book was, I guess, being honored, you would say. Did you read from that book when you were at LitFest?
I was on a panel with a couple other authors.
You write for, among others, New Republic. Do you always write for New Republic, or do I find you're writing in other magazines as well?
Probably the New York Times Magazine most, but a bunch of magazines. Hustlin',
is that what you just... Not Hustler, which is a magazine.
Yeah, I don't write for Hustler,
You are always Hustlin'.
Yeah.
How does that work, though? So here's your piece about community policing in Rockford. Okay, there's this topic. Do you come up with an idea and then pitch it to editors, or do they come up with ideas and sell you?
Both happen. In this case, an editor reached out to me with a premise, and then I went and sort of figured out whether it was worthy of a long magazine story.
So it's called Peace Officers.
Peace Officers.
Peace Officers, if you're reading it online at newrepublic.com, the print edition is out, and there you'll see a cop on the cover, and it says Good Cop. What's this story about that you've kind of looked into?
Yeah, so there's an extreme form of community policing in Rockford. You know, Rockford's about 90 miles northwest of us in Chicago. And what they're doing is they're moving police officers into high-crime neighborhoods. They're giving them a house. They're saying, live there for 3 years. And your assignment really is just to be a good neighbor. It's not to police the area. It's to sort of address crime by getting to the root causes and seeing what the community needs.
What kind of house do they give these people?
I mean, it's like bungalows.
They're not ramshackle houses that need to be rehabbed. Reasonable houses.
Oh, totally.
But they're in high crime areas.
They're in high crime areas. So, you know, there's this idea that you're a police officer at the end of the day. You know, you want to go home and you don't really like the idea of downward mobility. You don't want to think about this 24/7, which is basically their assignment. So they're not on a regular beat. They pass out their cell phone numbers to their neighbors. And they're supposed to be around.
How many police officers in the Rockford Police Department?
302 officers have signed up for this duty.
302?
No, 300 officers total.
Two, yeah, because I thought the number was two.
Yeah, two have signed up.
What do you make of that?
So it makes it seem like it's a small experiment, you know, rather than something that's changing the culture of a police department so far.
Right. So are they disappointed that we'll give you free lodging and you don't have to do some of the things other cops are doing? You're just being a good neighbor. I'll take that. Heck, I'm a good neighbor. I mowed my neighbor's lawn today. And I still have to pay rent. Granted, I live in a nicer area than maybe a high crime area in Rockford, but I guess that's not enticing enough to get any more than two of them on board, huh?
Well, they started with two, actually, even only signed up. But so far they only had two slots, funding for two. You know, Rockford's not doing the best financially. You know, they think they might ramp it up to about 9 of their 10 policing districts. But so far, this is what they offered. But then actually only two people even applied.
Right, so 100%,
100%
of the people that applied.
When you said what to make of it, you know, most cops don't go into the job thinking, I'm going to do community policing. They think about, in a very traditional sense, of like, you know, getting guns and drugs off the streets and arresting bad guys. So that this program is not only to sort of, you know, gain back trust in the community, but it also needs to change the mindset of police officers, that policing can be something broader, that it could be something different, and that you might actually, you know, do more to stop crime by coming at it in this way, which seems to them counterintuitive.
Well, some of the police officers in your article look down at this kind of business, right? Signing up for what they see as soft duty, right?
Yeah.
And yet you also point out, of the 911 calls, most of them are not for emergencies. Most of them are not for crimes, right?
Yeah. I mean, what makes policing so hard at this point in time in Chicago and in Rockford and anywhere is that police are called upon to do all of this kind of social service work. They're on the front lines of dealing with people who are suffering from drug addiction, who are suffering from mental illness. They you know, a majority of their calls are for domestic disputes where actually just like good communication skills are what's needed.
Right.
So this is like, you know, this sort of counterintuitive idea of what policing is actually the brunt of police work.
Okay, so I'll read your article to you. Many officers in Rockford seem to distinguish between what Thurmond and Turner, the two officers we're talking about, did, and what real police work entails. It's a cushy job. He kisses babies for us. A veteran cop ribbed Thurmond in front of me. That would be you, the author of this piece. But then you write, nationally, only an estimated 25% of 911 calls have anything to do with crime, and just 5% of arrests are for violent offenses. So when someone calls 911, it's generally not a bank robbery anyway. I guess the point being that often cops are called even via 911 to do community policing.
Yeah.
What's a day like for these then, these two officers? What do they imagine a day would be like for them? Do they get them put up on their uniform in the morning?
They put on a uniform, they put on a bulletproof vest, they carry a gun, they have, you know, handcuffs. They're carrying.
Are they assigned to beat though? Then you have to, you know, for 8 hours drive your squad car around this area.
They don't have to drive their squad car around. They're in their neighborhood. One of them is a younger cop who is former military, just signed up, Eric Thurmond. So he likes to still ride around and stay, as cops say, busy, which is like, you know, looking, you know, listening on dispatch for crimes and responding. But then he's also going to read at schools. He's stopping into stores. He's checking on local businesses. He is going to community meetings. He's checking with neighbors. This is sort of his day. Each of them stops into one of the police districts every morning to check in. It's ill-defined.
But they're not given an assignment when they check in. Now you got to go check on that bank robbery or that car that's missing.
It's a non-traditional job, so they're not working a beat where they have to respond.
How do we know that they're not golfing or just, you know, they're taking a nap?
Yeah, so they have commanders who are looking after them, and you know they're checking in, and then they're trying to run larger projects of, you know, like community events. So there is a kind of like officer friendly, and I use that like, you know, sparingly, but like, you know, that's our sense of like suddenly a cop in the school or like a cop running the basketball league. They're doing that kind of stuff, but they're also thinking of bigger. They're thinking about, they're getting to know, say, like with the local Walgreens that is constantly getting robbed and their addicts hanging out every night. Like, what could they possibly do differently to think about, you know, changing the culture there? One of the cops, Patrice Turner, I was with her one morning and we're in the police district and I'm sitting there and I could sort of see all the people there of how much poverty and crime are the same. You know, there's a homeless guy who's walked in, who's been banned from getting his boots from another place. There's a young guy who has to check in for some reason I couldn't figure out. And she starts talking to each of them and she has this amazing ability to just draw people out, which is, it's different than what we normally think about cops. And she's drawing them out and sort of figuring out what their needs are. So one, she says to one of the guys, are you working? And he sort of bashfully says he isn't. And she's responded to one of these signs on the side of the road that says job. And she's given, you know, and just a phone number. They look really these shady signs. And she's called and she's found out that there's this bus service that takes people from Rockford to nearby factories, pays $12 an hour, doesn't check background, isn't concerned if you have a criminal record. And so she's telling this to people that she finds. And she's figuring out almost like a social service provider what they need. And, you know, her theory is, you know, people are going to fulfill their needs no matter what. And so if they're hungry and they can't have no way to feed themselves, they're going to commit a crime.
Right. Well, this isn't just her theory. I mean, that's the theory behind this kind of community policing. Yeah. You're taking the resources of an officer, and instead of fighting crime, what you think we're going to... infuse them into the community and prevent crime from happening? Is that the idea?
Yeah, long term. I mean, so that this is...
Are there any ways to calculate the success of this? Do we know if this is having a positive impact?
Well, I mean, there it's harder to say, but certainly there's been tons of research on this by all sorts of people over the years. Community policing isn't new. It's always been sort of underfunded and segregated. But it's, you know, examples of it have, there are elements that show that there are other ways to stop crime.
Boy, that's a certain kind of person, isn't it? Because most of us shy away from the people who are a little frightening on the streets. I mean, just, you know, guys holding signs or walking around and you don't know what their mental state is. These two officers are going to engage those people, right?
Yeah.
Help those people. To say nothing of the guy that's running the Walgreens. This texter from 847 said, do the residents, the neighbors know the police officer is living in the neighborhood, or the officers on the down low, kind of?
Yeah, not on the down low at all. They go door to door. They had flyers. They gave everyone their cell phone number.
Do the residents in those neighborhoods then, where they're doing this, are they like, hooray, a cop lives here?
You
or
know,
do they like, I don't want the police around
it's
here?
A mix. So I tell a story to lead the article, that the first day Eric Thurman is going into his place. And he's, you know, he's a young guy. This is his first house he's ever owned. I mean, he's only, you know, he's in his early 20s. And he's excited. And he sees a neighbor looking out the window. He comes out to greet him. And the guy, you know, says, are you going to have cameras up? And Eric is sort of, you know, thinks the guy is actually concerned, you know, that he might be responding to a crime. He's confused. He says, yeah. The next time he comes by, the guy is gone. It turns out that he was selling drugs there. So there's some people for whom a police officer in the neighborhood is no good. Another story I tell, though, it's more complicated than that. Like I said, that this is really about this moment of deep, deep distrust that communities have for police. We're living this in Chicago. Our homicide clearance rate is below 20% right now. It's a third of the national average. It's horrendous. That means that, you know, 4 out of every 5 people who kill somebody go scot-free. That case is unsolved. So it sure would help if communities trusted police in a different way, but that's just not where we are. So Eric is, you know, Officer Thurman is driving his squad car. He sees a man, you know, older guy carrying groceries. He pulls over and he says, hey, can I offer you a ride? You know, the guy looks at the back seat that he's being offered, the back seat of a squad car. And as I write, there's a lot of history there. You know, he's not going to overcome that. The guy says, no, I'm good. And Eric, who's a, you know, fantastic guy, you know, has a sort of cherubic, you know, happy face.
Is an African-American himself, if that matters.
Black guy, yeah. He says, come on, I'll give you a ride. Come on, you're carrying all those groceries. He's like, no, I'm good. You just can't overcome that. There's a huge barrier. So I say that there are only 2 of 300. You know, we're looking, you know, at a force here that's much bigger. And we have, you know, in Chicago, and we're also dealing with very similar things. There are a lot of barriers to overcome.
Do we have anything like this in Chicago?
So we have CAPS, which started in the 1990s, Community Alternative Policing Strategy. This was studied initially, and you know it turned out that it built trust in communities, and it increased officers' enjoyment in their jobs. This effort has been massively defunded. It still exists. If you live in a Chicago neighborhood, you could see your CAPS officers once a month. But it's been, as a percentage of the budget, it's decreased immensely.
So, do they pay for the officers' homes the way they do in
Rockford? No. So we've had a couple efforts here, but nothing like that. You know, what we have here is that we have, you know, you have to live in the city if you're a police officer. But what happens is cops live on, you know, these peripheral neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So, you know, you still go into these neighborhoods where it feels foreign and you seem like an occupying force. And you see a lot of the people as, you know, you don't differentiate between neighbors and people who might be doing crime.
Ben Austin's in our studio. The article that he's talking about, you can read online right now at the New Republic. Is the print edition out right now? Is that one on stands?
Yeah.
Okay. On stands, it's called Good Cop, but when you're reading it online, you'll see Peace Officers. I got a couple more questions for you about this. Maybe you've got a question you want to text in, 312-981-7200. Just give me a minute about what's going on in Chicago. I mean, you said they had that CAPS program. How else does your story relate to us here in this city?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in this post-Laquan McDonald moment, right? Where the trust in policing, which has been broken, and we're working to figure it out. We have a consent decree that's about to come down any week now. But we also have a federal government that has made the pressure on the city to follow that, you know, much less. We know from the federal government and the Department of Justice, they're much less interested in any reforms of police officers. We have things like, you know, No Cop Academy, which is this resistance of a $95 million new police academy, yeah, saying that money could be much better spent on efforts that would keep neighborhoods that are overly policed already, you know, safer through, you know, investing in schools or alternative programs.
I would like to see de-escalation strategies taught to cops more.
Yeah, so all of that.
And civilians, too, by the
way. Yeah, well, that's tricky because cops do need to be retrained. That was one of the major findings, you know, post Laquan McDonald. But that also, you know, we already spend about 40% of the budget on public safety. So we're looking for alternative methods. So what I was going to say, that these forces from, you know, any sense of reform is, you know, damaging public safety, to, on the other end, abolish the police, you know, these sort of extreme arguments. You have a program like this where, you know, actually you can see the results. But it would need such a massive investment, and it also would have to work on changing a police culture, which is so averse to change.
And yet, I think your piece is optimistic. At least I thought, okay, here's a good idea, and I sure like these cops, and I like this idea. It's in the New Republic, the July-August issue. I'm out of time, but keep writing, and Ben, come back into our studio. Either follow up with this story or talk to us about your next piece.
Thanks so much.